Please join me in Genesis chapter 17, where we're going to pick up in verse 15. We are looking at the establishment of the covenant of circumcision. It's happening in the 99th year of Abram, who has now become Abraham. Instead of being just simply exalted father, he is now going to be father of many nations. And so one of the things that God gives to him at this time to help him in the reminder that he is going to have many descendants, and these descendants will come from a lot of different ethnic groups, and that some of his descendants will be kings. He is going to occupy his descendants, at least some of them are going to occupy the promised land. And so as a ongoing sign of this promise to this particular genetic family, God says, I want you to snip off just a little tiny bit of flesh on the tip of the male penis of every 8-day-old baby boy, and this will be called circumcision. Circumcision is a fancy word that means to cut around. Eighth day is the perfect day for this to happen because that's when clotting is at its highest peak in a person's life. And it's not much of a surgery. Very quick. We can't say it's painless, but it happens in such a way that it's not remembered. Even though I'm a Gentile, it was kind of habitual, at least in my community when I was a kid, for all the little male babies to be circumcised. So I'm circumcised. And you know what? I don't remember it. No big deal. Okay? So it's not that big of a deal. But what does circumcision do? It is a perpetual daily reminder to the circumcised male that they are different than those who are not circumcised. And so that was the point, ultimately, that God was giving to these guys, is Abram, or Abraham, you and your seed after you are going to be different than the rest of the people. You are to be holy as I am holy. You are to walk as I walk in holiness, in sinlessness. That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to be blameless. So this was going to be a daily reminder to all the male members of the Israeli community, lead in holiness. Now, of course, we know that many members of this genetic line have failed in keeping that part of the covenant, but there are reminders throughout their history, coming from the prophets, coming from the writings of the prophets, that just because they failed doesn't change God's intention. Circumcision for the Israeli people was to be a reminder to be holy and different than the sinful peoples of this world. In the New Testament, Paul addresses this in a couple of his letters, that the bodily circumcision was never the point. And so when we Gentiles come into the faith of Abraham, we're not required to be circumcised, but we are still expected to be holy as God is holy, to be different than the sinful peoples around us. And so the point has always been, be different than the sinners, be like the Savior. Okay, so that's my real quick circumcision teaching. At the same time that God has Abraham have a name change, going along with this circumcision, he gives Sarai a name change as well. Verse 15, God said to Abraham, as for Sarai, which means my little princess. As for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her Sarai anymore, but rather Sarah shall be her name, which is a grown-up name. Sarah has the sense of a grown-up lady. And when we say lady here, we're not talking about gender so much as we are talking about dignity. The word sar in Hebrew is the idea of someone in charge. And so she is in charge of her community. And so she is now going to be in charge of a growing community. Keep reading, verse 16. For I will bless her, and moreover, I will give you a son by her. I will bless her, and she will become nations. More than one ethnic group, several ethnic groups. Kings of people shall come from her. So people in charge in many of these people groups are going to trace themselves back to Sarah, to the queen, the lady of Abraham. And this is, as I was saying at our close last session, this is the point at which God drops the bomb on them that I'm still going with the original plan that I had in mind, that you two are going to be the genetic source of the promised one, of the seed. Remember that 13 years earlier, Sarai at that time, having heard about God speaking to Abraham about having a son from his own body, she decides that they should help God out. And so they went through this whole surrogacy thing. And that's how Hagar comes into the picture. That's how Ishmael comes into the picture. But here is God saying, that was not my plan. This is my plan. Sarah will be the mother of the promised one. And this is the point at which a name is chosen for this first generation promised one. Verse 17, then Abraham fell on his face and he laughed. And the word for laughed here is probably supposed to be an onomatopoeia, meaning a word that sounds something like what it represents. And it's that catching in the throat of a stifled laugh. And so he basically goes, when God says that Sarah is going to have a baby boy. And the reason why he laughs is brought up next. So Abraham fell on his face and he laughed and said to himself, shall a child be born to a man who is 100 years old? Because that's how old he'll be when the baby's born. Shall Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child? So Sarah is 90. There's about 9 years difference between husband and wife here. And she is postmenopausal. That's the best way to express this. She has experienced that point that every woman who lives long enough experiences. Her period ends, and it is now clear cut. I can't have any kids. Guaranteed. It's not going to happen. And so she is postmenopausal, and Abraham knows that. And for God to suggest that she's going to have a kid is just, it's silly. It's goofy. It's unbelievable. It is something to be chortled at. That's the way that this whole story is happening here. It's real life, folks. This is real stuff. And so Abraham said to God, so he thought this stuff in his head, and then he says this out loud. Oh, that Yishmael may live before you. So Yishmael's 13. And as I've explained a couple of different times, he is legally the son of Abraham and Sarah. He is biologically the son of Abraham and Hagar. But Sarah is his mom, legally. And so Yishmael has been raised these last 13 years as the heir apparent of this tent community. Many hundreds of people under the leadership of the patriarch Abraham. So that's what Abraham resorts to. He says, well, can't Yishmael just be the heir that goes before you? And God said to him, no. But Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son. So no, that was never my plan. And Sarah will have a baby boy, and you shall call his name Isaac, which is a form of that word for laughter. So in effect, and let's all have a little fun with this, in effect, the name Yitzhak in Hebrew means giggles, or more specifically, I think, snicker, chortle maybe. So it is that laughter of, you got to be kidding me. So God says, okay, since you laughed at this idea, that's what his name's going to be from here on out. Continuing, I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant for his offspring after him. So God is saying, this is the line of the promise. Abraham, Yitzhak, and then for future reference, Jacob, and then Judah, and then we'll go on from there until finally we go through David, through Nathan, the son of David, until finally we arrive at the female part of the line, Mary, who gives birth to Yehoshua, Jesus. So that's the covenant line that is getting started right here with Yitzhak, little giggles, little chuckle. Verse number 20. Now, as for Yishmael, I have heard you, which is a bit of a smile right there. Because remember, the name Yishmael means God hears or God has heard. As for Yishmael, I have heard you. I've heard when you've talked about how he's your son and you love him and you want good things for him. Of course. Behold, I have blessed him and will make him fruitful and multiply him greatly. He shall father 12 princes, and I will make him into a great nation. 12 princes will be listed later in the book of Genesis, and those 12 princes become the 12 tribes of Arabia. One of those tribes is identified as the tribe from which Muhammad will come. And this is one of the reasons I say many of the Muslim people of the lower Middle East trace their lineage back to Abraham through Yishmael. And so God tells Abraham, yes, Ishmael will have blessings put on him. A lot of people are going to come from him. In fact, there'll be 12 princes that will have famous names well into the future. But he's not the one through which the promise is going. He's not the hereditary line that we're going to talk about. Now, keep in mind that the first readers of the book of Genesis are the Israelis coming out of Egypt. And so they are reading about how their ethnic line, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, who becomes Israel, their ethnic line is the line of the promise. But there are neighbors to them, the Ishmaelites, that are also related into the story. And so they need to be aware of that. Now, back to the text, verse 21. But I will establish my covenant with Yitzhak, whom Sarah shall bear to you at this time next year. So apparently she's not going to get pregnant for 3 months or so. And then she'll have the baby about 12 months from the time that this story is being told. And the time when circumcision becomes the rule of the tent city that Abraham is the patriarch of. Verse 22. When he had finished talking with him, God went up from Abraham. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that God had been like in some sort of cloud that had descended on Abraham and then the cloud lifted? That's a possibility. We actually kind of see that language elsewhere in the story of God's interaction with humanity. Or is it that God had taken some sort of human form and was speaking to him and then departed and ascended up into the sky? We have examples of that in other places as well. Don't know which. All we know is that the conversation is over. So what is expected now? Well, what's Abraham going to do? Is he going to obey or blow God off? Will he do in accordance with his faith, or will he hesitate and fail in his faith? And the answer is, verse 23, then Abraham took Ishmael, his son, and all those born in his house, or bought with his money. So whether they grew up under him as men or boys, or whether they came into the community because of buying up indebtedness contracts, all of these men and boys, every male among the men of Abraham's house, and we're talking about probably several hundreds. We already know that there were, 317, I think, servants a few years earlier that had been born in the tent city of Abraham and his father. So many hundreds of men and young men that are now going to be circumcised. So he circumcised the flesh of their foreskins that very day as God said to him. So he acted in faith. He did what God told him to do. And so all these hundreds of men and boys are circumcised on the exact same day. And Abraham was 99 years old when he was circumcised in the flesh on his foreskin. Now, I think the tradition is that he used an obsidian blade. I think I remember reading about that in, or maybe a flint blade, in the Jewish text. I guess it doesn't ultimately matter. But this is a lot of surgery to be happening. And then I'm sure no work got done for several days after this. But verse 25 reminds us that Ishmael, his son, was 13 years old when he was circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin. And it is interesting that in some communities that seem to trace their circumcision traditions back to this event, back to this connection to Abraham, they don't do it on the eighth day of life, which is what the Israelis were definitely told to do in their Mosaic law, which connects with what Abraham was told to do. Instead, these communities do it at around the same time that Ishmael was circumcised, that is, right around puberty. And they make it a reaching manhood ceremony. And so just kind of a little side thing for you to be aware of. Verse 26, that very day, Abraham and his son Ishmael were circumcised. And all the men of his house, those born in the house and those bought with money from the foreigner, were circumcised with him. And so from this time forward, one of the clear indicators of being part of the Abrahamic faith, being part of the Abrahamic covenant, is circumcision. Verse 18, or chapter 18, verse 1. He who is appeared to him by the oaks of Mamre. Now remember, oaks is kind of a Western equivalent for our sake, because oaks are big trees, and the word here is about big trees. The terebinths seem to be what's being talked about here. The oaks of Mamre were basically big old trees around which this community of tent dwellers were headquartered. It was kind of the beginning of the city of Hebron. So here is Abraham. What's he doing? He's sitting by the door of his tent in the heat of the day. It is, for all practical purposes, siesta time. You would get up early in the morning, do your work. As the sun reaches its zenith, you would take a break for a couple of hours, have a nice lazy lunch and rehydration time, maybe take a little nap. And then as the sun is declining toward the afternoon, you'd go back to work and keep working until about sunset. So that's what we're talking about here. It's during that midpoint of the day when it's really, really hot, and it's also eating and sleepy time. So he lifted up his eyes and he looked, and behold, three men were standing in front of him. So he sees guys approaching, probably from the west, because they're going to be heading off to the east, as we'll discover next session when we go farther into this story. And this is the Middle Eastern tradition that's still prevalent, especially amongst the Bedouins, that you always offer hospitality to those passing through your sphere of influence and control, especially in the heat of the day. So when he saw these three men, he ran from the tent door to meet them, and he bowed himself to the earth, and he said, O Lord, which is not intended to be an expression of divinity here. We'll find out in a little bit that God is the one at the center of this visitation. But Abraham doesn't know that. All he knows is that he sees three strangers coming toward his tent in the heat of the day, and one of them is clearly older and more dignified. So he treats him with proper respect and dignity. He bows before him and says, Adonai, or my Lord, if I have found favor in your sight, do not pass by your servant. Let a little water be brought, wash your feet, and rest yourselves under the tree while I bring a morsel of bread that you may refresh yourselves. And after that, you may pass on since you have come to your servant. So this is hospitality, the love of strangers, the care and concern of others. So he invites them to rest for a while in the shade, while he has their feet washed, which means they can kick their sandals off and kind of rest their feet after being walking in the heat. They can have some bread and water or wine or maybe some milk or goat's cheese or something. Something to just get themselves ready for the next part of their journey and to just relax. So that's what he is offering. So they said, do as you've said. And so Abraham went quickly into the tent to Sarah and said, quick, 3 seahs of fine flour. Each seah is about 7 quarts or 7 liters of flour. So he's having enough bread here made, not just simply for the meal, but for them to take with them as well on their journey. So quick, take 3 seahs of fine flour, knead it, make cakes, make bread, flatbreads. So then Abraham ran to the herd and he took a calf, tender and good, and gave it to the young man who prepared it quickly. So they always had like a young calf ready to be butchered and turned into fresh meat, cooked up meat. He then, after all this preparation, and this preparation for this meal is going to take, you know, an hour or more, and you got some cooking time as well, but this is the siesta time. So they take a couple of hours, maybe 2-3 hours in the middle of the day. So he's getting all this taken care of. And then once it's done, verse 8, he took curds and milk. Curds is like the soft cheese before it's pressed into the big molds for cheese. And some milk and the calf that he'd prepared, and he set it before them. And then he stood by them under the tree while they ate. So he's acting like the maitre d' at a restaurant, ready to see to their needs.